everybody, welcome to a tag team edition of the Friday Filibuster. It is just myself and Daryl Loomis here.
Hi-yo.
And we thought we would just chew the fat, maybe go off off book for a little bit and talk about some things that we've just been thinking about. I guess that's on our mind. We'll say that. It'll be just kind of a dish session, if you will, I suppose.
Yeah, we'll call it
Coffee Talk with Dave and Daryl.
There you go.
Very good. Daryl, I know you said we had a little week off here. So, you know, you said there's a couple things that crossed your DVD player / Blu-ray players that you want to bring attention to. So I'll let you run with that.
All right, I got two things. First thing is the smaller thing is a spy thriller from 1952 called Five Fingers that's based on the story of Operation Cicero in World War II. Dave, are you familiar with Operation Cicero?
I'm not.
Okay. So, brief, very quick rundown. The butler to the British consulate in Turkey in World War II mm-hmm. decided for monetary purposes – to start taking photographs of conversations, missives, you know, stuff like that, and to sell them to the Germans. This stuff all included, finally, Operation Underbelly, which was finally D-Day. The Germans did not act on any of this stuff because they thought he was a British counteragent.
Okay.
And had they would have known the exact day, time, and location of the landing on Normandy, and may well have won the war. This story was written into a book in 1948 by one of the people involved, and then it was made a few years later by Joseph Mankiewicz with James Mason. In 1952, and it is hands down the best spy movie I've seen in a decade.
Wow, that's high praise.
For my money, it beats any Bond because it's not about gadgets and garbage. It's about the espionage, and it's suspenseful, and it's tense, and at times really funny. It's a really, really I'd never heard of it before. Didn't know the story. Didn't know anything. Fantastic movie. It came out on the Fox Cinema Archives on demand thing. So look for it.
Nice. So this was a review or just something you watched?
This was a review.
Okay.
This is something I got strictly because I like James Mason and he's fantastic, but more importantly, the story is tight as can be. And while movied up for sure, pretty close to the actual story, which is wild. The implications of the other side of the story, who knows? Who knows? Thank goodness.
Nice.
Thank goodness we don't have fealty to our Nazi overlords today because of this guy.
Nice.
Anyway, the other larger thing is I reviewed last week The Wolf of Wall Street, which I'm not a big Martin Scorsese fan overall. I respect him. Especially as a film preservationist, he has my undying respect in that realm. But I've never really been a huge fan of his movies. And I'm really not a fan of Leo DiCaprio.
Oh, interesting. Huh?
Never have been. Kind of just want to hit him. Sorry, Leo.
I'm sure he's listening. So.
I'm sure he's listening. So all apologies. But The Wolf of Wall Street is a fantastic movie and so much fun. I was laughing so much during that movie.
Now, I got to say, I've been having a hard time getting accustomed to the idea that Jonah Hill is a respected actor now.
He did a great job.
All right. I'm having a hard time coming to terms with that.
Well, I think one of the things that I think comes clear with Jonah Hill is I don't know that he's ever going to be able to be like a dramatic lead, but he brings a certain – deadpan humor.
Yeah, true.
To the whole thing. And this, you know, this Wolf of Wall Street's obviously also a true story. But he brings this sort of, as I said, deadpan, but it's, he's sort of the one that throws the absurdity into the face of the audience.
Okay.
All the time. And he works really well. And on that note, Rob Reiner, you know, also often a comic, often a comedian, does really, really well. He's probably my favorite character in the movie. But I just can't get over how much Leo DiCaprio is able to change his character from super happy to complete monster mid-speech. It's amazing. I mean, his performance is frankly amazing. I've never seen him do anything even close to this. Worth seeing for his performance alone. Obviously, Scorsese is a talented director and all of that stuff, but it's a hell of a movie.
All right. And as profane as they say.
Oh, easily as profane as they say. But no more profane than, like, you know, I mean, to be perfectly honest, no more profane than I am in my daily life.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so it's just normal language. It doesn't feel gratuitous. It just feels like normal people who cuss a ton. Now, fairly, there is more graphic nudity in that movie than I've seen in years.
Really?
So there is that going on. Well, the life is all drugs and prostitutes.
Oh, okay.
And so, but they don't shy away from anything. It's just, you know, wide shot, look at it all, look at how crazy this is. And
yeah,
where there's people who complained that it condoned the action, and there's people who claimed it didn't go far enough in condemning the action, it really does a great job of walking the middle of the line. So Goodfellas was fun, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to be a gangster?
That's true.
You know? And that's okay with me. You can have both sides of it if you're able to walk that line. And Scorsese does it really well. The screenplay's great. All of the performances across the board are fantastic. Jon Favreau appears and it's almost unrecognizable to me. It's fun. It's a little long, which I can accuse Scorsese of for like 15 movies, but whatever. And there's a couple of quibbles I have with it, but overall, it's hard not to have fun with that movie.
All right.
So.
Yeah, we'll see if that makes the cut around here. I agree with you on the Scorsese stuff. Again, it's like I objectively understand, you know, what the man has done, but it's hard for me to like really think of something that just totally moved me and grooved me that he did.
Well, and people love it. People look back on Goodfellas and think it's amazing. And recently, 3 or 4 months ago, I reviewed the Contemporary Classics Gangster Collection, and Goodfellas was part of that. And so I saw it again, and you know, it's a good movie. There's no question, but I'm just not on board. I appreciate his talent and skill, but I don't really care for the final product. Here I did in Wolf of Wall Street, but most of the time it's just difficult for me.
All right. So for me, like I've been a little bit behind, so I've nothing really of interest. I've got a whole bag of stuff that I've got to sift through, about 2 weeks worth of review product, so I have nothing really new to bring. I just finished, actually, before I hit record, just finished watching a movie called 20 Feet Below. And this is one of those movies where the disc packaging wants you to believe it's something that it's not, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like the cover of the disc is Danny Trejo holding an axe. There's fire around him. He's got, like, angel wings in the back. The tagline is "The Darkness Descending," you know, and there's, like, flames on the back. And it says, "Justice Rises Where Darkness Descends" on the back and blah, blah, blah. And there's screaming and blood. But when you actually watch the movie, it's more or less a melodrama about homelessness.
That doesn't sound as much fun as
that. It was not much fun. So, yeah. So, you know, it's tough because I always find myself, like, my opinion is clouded on movies like these. Like, part of me wonders, maybe it's an okay movie on its own merits, but I was served a bill of goods, and I'm going to take out my frustration on this movie, whether it's
well,
fair or not.
You know, we had that conversation a few months back about video store stuff, and that's what happens. Like, you rent something based on the cover.
Yeah.
And they're selling you a bill of goods.
They are.
And so you can't – I mean, part of the movie experience is the packaging.
True.
You know, if you got – if we didn't get cases with the movies we received and just discs in you know, in slip cases, then, you know, maybe you could have appreciated it for something that it was. Maybe it's good. Who knows?
Right.
Danny Trejo. I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
But anyway, the fact that you actually look at this thing and expect something and then don't get it is garbage.
Yeah, and I will say this, on the other end of the spectrum, it's been a good March for Jean-Claude Van Damme, can I just say. So I watched two movies of his in March. One was Enemies Closer, which I've already sung the praises of,
mm-hmm.
Which was that crossover between Cliffhanger and Firestorm. and another one, a movie called Welcome to the Jungle. And this is a screwball comedy, and he plays a straight comic role, but he does a parody of himself pretty much.
Hmm.
So he plays this corporate speaker, kind of teamwork guy. He gets hired to build morale around an office staff, and his name is Storm Rothschild, right?
Nice.
So it's just a very much of a parody. Like, he fights a tiger, and then he gets kind of exposed as a fraud at the end, and then he does just some really funny line reads. The movie itself is so-so, but Van Damme has done two straight. Let me just say this. As far as action stars from the 90s, the twilights of their careers, I think Van Damme has come across as one of the top guys, to be honest.
So if you look at it like boy bands, like action heroes are a bunch of boy bands, he's the Justin Timberlake.
Who's in that? So who's in that conversation? Seagal, who got fatter and fatter and just made the same movie.
Well, and also started to believe his own hype with, like, his deputy business. And
So there's a guy, when he was making movies and he was fit and trim, he took himself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he kind of got bloated, he still took himself too seriously. And he had stunt doubles doing his stuff. So,
right.
I mean, he's out. Dolph Lundgren, I got a soft spot for, but he's kind of been in a cycle of no name, kind of same old dreck. And the high points have been like the Universal Soldier movies,
right,
which have been surprisingly decent. But again, Van Damme's in those as well. So I'll call that a wash.
Right.
You know, and then you got guys like, so you got Stallone, right, who's kind of, so he's doing a few things. So he's like trying to do different things, but they're not huge successes.
Never really works. He's incomprehensible.
Right. And like to me, Expendables 2, I enjoyed a decent amount. And I thought that was what the first Expendables should have been.
Yeah.
But again, who was one of the high points of Expendables 2? Van Damme. Right?
Absolutely.
So again, I kind of – and then Schwarzenegger obviously is just, you know, whatever.
Schwarzenegger he's a shell.
Yeah, he is a shell. I would say that. Like, so he's kind of a shell.
As
so
as amazing as Predator was, that Schwarzenegger is gone.
That's true. And look, I think in hindsight, I don't know if anybody – can compare with what Schwarzenegger did in that stretch. Really,
no.
You know, if you really think about it, in his prime.
On Commando, Predator, Terminator.
True Lies, Terminator
True
2.
Lies, all the way up to True Lies. To me, there's nothing after True Lies that's worth anything.
I will say.
End of Days.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's nothing. But I will say I do have a soft spot for Terminator 3. I think it's an underrated
movie. Never seen it.
Really? So I think it's an underrated road action movie that doesn't try to ape Terminator 2.
Okay.
And has its own identity. So, and he's good and he's funny in that. So, but you're right. After that, it's kind of generic. So like looking at all that, I think Van Damme has done well for himself just because he's like, he never took himself. I don't think he ever took himself that seriously to begin.
When you look at Kickboxer and Bloodsport.
Bloodsport, Time Cop, right?
Yeah, Time Cop is. I mean, and that's in his heyday. You know, that's not him doing self parody like
no,
that's
right, right.
That's his deal.
Right.
Universal Soldier, the first Universal Soldier. You know, what was the one he played twins?
Double Impact, which is so bad. You know. And that movie's so bad. Like, okay, to me, the Dennis Rodman movie is an abomination, so we'll grant him that miss. But, like, even his bad ones are entertaining in their badness.
He's entertaining. He's always athletic. I mean, he to this day, he's like, 55 years old. He's a very athletic man today.
I just feel like his first priority was to entertain his audience. I felt like whether that meant him making fun of himself, you know, taking seriously, in this Enemies Closer movie, he is out of control, and it's great, you know, and he just kind of he just wants to entertain. So I think that's an endearing quality. And the other thing is he took a punch. Like he got his butt kicked in movies. I mean, right. I appreciate that about action stars.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, that's where, you know, stuff like The Raid Redemption is such an amazing movie because these people are taking their licks.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a believability to it, even if – and in those old early Van Damme movies, even if there's – you know, even if they're silly.
But the end of the movie
– feel good.
Yeah, but the end of the movie, he's dripping blood and he's –
Yeah, the fights feel like fights.
Right.
And, of course, with Kickboxer and Bloodsport, they're just like – they make no bones about the fact there's no plot here.
Right. Right.
This is fighting.
That's right. This is just – I will – and, you know, here's another – and, again – since we're just on the Van Damme hype train, a couple other movies that's – like we've always talked about how, you know, Sudden Death is obviously to me a great little diehard knockoff and an excellent – you know, a great gem of the 90s. And he is like perfect in that movie.
Yeah, he's great. Now, to not to interrupt the Van Damme hype train, but did you happen to see Chris, the outtake from Parks and Rec.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did we
Chris
not talk about that?
Did we talk about that? Fantastic.
It is. Yeah. So we may have mentioned a couple episodes ago, find Chris Pratt's outtake. He does a impromptu song about sudden death. And it pretty much would be, if we had the rights to it, it would be the theme to this podcast.
But yeah. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. It's like, to me, that's like, that's why that movie's great, Chris Pratt.
Yeah, I've shown it to a number of people who have never seen Sudden Death, and now they don't really need to see Sudden Death because Chris Pratt already told them what the movie's about.
That's right, yes.
And in a really kind of elegant way.
That's right. So, like, again, so even Van Damme – so to me, like, the bad movies of, like, Stallone and Seagal are just, like, not fun and unwatchable. You know,
yeah,
like,
unwatchable.
You know, just not – like that Escape Plan I just reviewed with Schwarzenegger and Stallone. Just not fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just not – but Van Damme's bad movies are fun. Like Lionheart. Bad movie,
fun.
Objectively, but a ton of fun to watch.
Fun to watch.
Like
and
he beats up a dude in an abandoned polar bear cage in a zoo. You know? I mean, that's great. Give me that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he's goalie at the Stanley Cup.
That's great.
Great.
Hey, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, more power to you.
More power.
JCVD, which is also a very fun movie.
Oh, I have not seen that one, actually.
It's very fun. He's always fun. He may be a weird Belgian douchebag.
Yeah, right. I don't even know. I don't even know. Like, I don't know. Is he a douchebag? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I'd be surprised. To be honest, I don't know the man, but I'd be surprised. He seems just like a wacko guy who just –
Yeah,
all id, right? He's
love him.
Id, so
love him. And on that note of 80s action people, what the heck ever happened to Don the Dragon Wilson? Everybody else got terrible movies after their initial run, but there was nothing for him after American Dragon.
Is he still alive? I guess that's a real question.
Well, let's look him up.
Yeah, so let's see. I guess he's still alive. Yeah, he's still alive. He's got a lot of stuff in post-production that's been – he's in Expendables 4, apparently.
Oh, is he? Well, that's good.
He's in
Scorpion
King, The Lost Throne. I did see him – man, this is funny. Looking at his IMDb list, I did see him in a straight-to-DVD sci-fi movie called The Last Sentinel starring Katie Sackhoff. I do remember him being in it.
Ah, very good, very good.
So, yeah, he's still around. That's good to know. That's good to know. And so now transitioning – from Van Damme, which I'm glad we were able to give his just desserts. I do want to just talk briefly about True Detective, HBO's True Detective.
Oh, I need to see that show.
I will say I can't remember the last film, show, miniseries, whatever, that just floored me like this. To me it was one of the most one of the great experiences I've had partaking in a film or TV show. I know that's hyperbole, but it's been a week since I've seen the finale, and I finally feel like I'm disentangling from the world That was
well, that was yeah. That was how I felt about the. So are you? Did you get caught up on Breaking Bad?
I'm sorry, I haven't even started it. So.
Okay, so that's how I feel about Breaking Bad. Especially, it's the second to last episode called Ozymandias, which is an old Percy Shelley poem that is basically the. When you look at that poem and the plot arc of Breaking Bad, you might even say that Vince Gilligan based it off of Ozymandias. When that episode ended, the second to last, or maybe it wasn't the second to last, but it was somewhere right around there, I felt physically and emotionally so alone.
Interesting.
Sad and it was not good. It was not a good feeling. It took three or four viewings of the episode for me to really be able to wrap my head around it and feel like I could move on.
Yeah, interesting.
And True Detective sounds like it's got a lot of that same sort of feeling attached to it.
Yeah, and I think that's correct. And what True Detective did was it created this world, and so we've talked horror movies, and I've seen some stuff, right? I have seen some stuff, and it's been a while since I've been so just kind of taken aback by just the darkness that is created in this. Like, but it's what's fascinating. And I'm at the point now where I'm watching stuff. I just want to be surprised, you know, not cheap surprise, not like, oh, I can't believe they do that gratuitous thing, right? Like, tell me a story, show me characters that will surprise me, you know, because we've seen so much, right? So what he does, you got eight episodes here. I'm not going to spoil anything because it really needs to be seen as a whole.
Yeah. But is the whole season – the whole season's eight episodes?
Eight episodes, yeah.
Okay.
And it's just fascinating the way it's told. It's just, anyway, so – but he creates this world, and it is a world of dread and darkness. And some of the antagonists, the villains here are the most evil creations you will see. Like really, just like to the point where, you know, seriously, days after watching episodes, I'd be like – you know, my skin would be crawling, and I would, you know how you just feel like you are part of that world, and then the further you get removed from that world, you feel like okay, I'm back more towards reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make because you feel like you were just because you're so and it's done because like it's done with the music, it's done with the cinematography, and first and foremost, and the writing, but it's done with the acting, and that was a big thing. So you had Harrelson and McConaughey, so these two legit guys, right? Mm-hmm. And both, like, knocking it out of the park in a big way. And, like, I don't know if anyone's had as good a year McConaughey has, to be honest.
I doubt it. He's got that. He's got, obviously, Dallas Buyers Club. And he has this amazing 10-minute performance in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Interesting. All right. You know, and so, like, have you seen Mud, by the way?
I've not seen Mud.
I've heard good things about that, too. I feel like I need to go watch that. So, anyway, McConaughey, like, is the man. And he just, like, I'd be shocked if he doesn't get an Emmy. Like, to me, he just books it, right? But yeah. Harrelson is just as good, too. So anyway, but what is surprising, and again, this won't – I'll try not to spoil this, but just the finale is surprising to me. It's like at one point you are in the darkest darkness. You are in the heart of darkness, you know, with you know, the plot and the crimes that are being committed. And then the movie ends on this amazing, optimistic note. It's amazing. Like I turned them and I was like, this is unbelievable. And you go, and that's from one episode to the other. And I just thought, you know what? That kind of takes balls too. You know, it wasn't necessarily a happy ending, mm-hmm. right? Because he's going, you know, they're going for this authentic world and they're not shying away from the dark deeds
right.
of men and whatnot.
Which I appreciate.
Right. It's like, you know, but he could have, it's not nihilistic. I'll put it that way. You know, it was, flirting with nihilism and this oppressive darkness. McConaughey delivers these speeches that are just so depressing, but you just see this arc, the arc that these characters go through, and it ends on one of the most amazing scenes I've ever seen. So, like right now, it really stands tall. It's just one of those works that just enraptured me from the beginning, horrified me, like just drew out all these emotions, and it's been a while, right? It's been a while since I felt like I've related to that. And I have all the respect in the world for Nick Pizzolatto or whatever, I think that's his name, who wrote it. Because I think he was, like, everything just kind of made sense. And it's like, you know how you just see something that kind of really gets to the human condition, right? As corny as that may sound, like when that happens, when that nerve is touched, you feel like, okay, this is something special.
Yeah, the singular most viscerally disturbing experience I've ever had watching movies, and I've seen everything from, I don't know, Cannibal Holocaust to a Serbian film to Shocking Asia and whatever, and screw it all. The most visceral, horrid experience I've ever had watching a movie is Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. About Henry Lee Lucas, Tom McNaughton's first movie, what's his name? Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
Michael Rooker's performance, it makes me afraid.
Yeah.
When I think about that movie, I am afraid. I'm not afraid of a Serbian film. I'll watch it again. It's Human Centipede 2. I don't want to watch it again, but I would if you gave me some money. But when I bought the DVD, I wound up reviewing the Blu-ray for it, which actually was what broke me of the spell. But when I bought the 25th anniversary DVD, this is 5, 6, 7 years ago, of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, I hadn't seen it in 15 years because I was afraid of it. And I'm a person who over and over and over.
Yeah.
But I was afraid of it. And I bought it and I set it on my to watch pile. And it was always on top and it was always skipped for about 90 days.
Oh, nice.
And then I'm like, you know what? Grow a pair and watch the stupid movie. It's just a movie. But then I watched it. Again, it was the first time in 15 years again, but it's devastating. And when a piece of entertainment can be devastating to your like psyche and to your emotional core, which is what this sounds is what True Detective sounds like. It's what the Ozymandias episode of Breaking Bad was for me. That's special.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's entertainment is what it is. You know, I like being entertained. I watch professional wrestling because I like being entertained. But
there's a difference.
There's a
between
class.
And there's a difference between escapism, right?
Right.
And so, like, you know, like True Detective, Henry Portrait, I mean, you don't really want to escape to those worlds, right?
No.
You know, or you don't want to escape to the world of The Wire. You know, you don't want to escape to the world of Breaking Bad, right? You don't watch these to, like, forget about your life because it's a more entertaining area. You know, Wolf of Wall Street is probably pure escapism, right? You're just kind of seeing this happen. So, like, to your point, but those can often be, like, when you really get down to, again, I hate being artsy-fartsy, but that the true art of it all, like,
right.
when it just hammers on those nerve endings,
right.
And that's when you got something.
Yeah, there's, you know, and I'll talk to people about how painful this whole thing is, and they'll question, well, why do you watch it? Because sometimes it's good to be reminded about the awful things so that you can better appreciate the nice things.
Which is, to be honest, you probably just summed up True Detective as succinctly as you could.
Good.
You know, like,
now I don't have to watch the damn show.
You really do. Like, you really do. So, like, you know, relentlessly, you know, basic, you know, relentless. The title card for it was Man is the Cruelest Animal, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, and there's truth to that, but it doesn't. Just the exciting thing was it doesn't end on an nihilistic note, which is just really exciting. So I don't know. You know, like if it ended like, you know, everything sucks, you know,
right.
You know, then I would probably have less respect for it, you know.
Yeah,
which a lot of
nihilism and realism.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, it's like, you know, I've seen every horror movie in the world is nihilistic, it seems, right? I mean, like, all the bad guys come. You know, Jason always wakes up after, you know, he gets struck by lightning, you know.
That and then just he makes scientific sense.
That's true. So anyway, I just wanted, real quick, so taking that, so I've been thinking about that obviously a lot, you know, and like the good stuff you always just keep thinking about, you know, just wrestling with. But like we've talked about Noah, which is opening in 2 days and it's going to be mm-hmm. opening today as this airs. And like that's kind of had me really looking forward to Noah even more, and I've read some, the stuff I've read has got me excited. It's been pretty well reviewed, and I'm really fascinated by what I'm hearing about this movie, which sounds like it is like a down and dirty biblical, like straight up Old Testament epic, you know? So not Charlton Heston Old Testament, like,
right.
You know, so badass, dirty, demons running around, you know, depraved
yeah,
man.
Being the Sodom and Gomorrah business.
Absolutely. Like, so,
it's the business.
So screwed up that God is like, wow, I need to hit the reset button, you know? And there's like, and it sounds like, and that's what it sounds like is Aronofsky is kind of gone for here. You know,
right.
I've heard a lot of the, I've heard like the words mercy and redemption, all that stuff thrown in as well. And it makes me feel like Aronofsky, atheist that he is, though this movie has really been a passion project of his,
well,
which is fascinating.
He's atheistic, but he's also culturally Jewish.
True.
And, you know, his first movie, Pi, was about, you know, math and Hasidic Judaism. I mean, this is part of his, like, the Bible, the Torah, in his yeah. case, is part of his life. And I think that, you know.
Which to people, me, don't you think, like, would have some intellectual curiosity on that, right? So
yes.
It's like, and to me, I'll take an atheist, a talented atheist, who's
mm-hmm.
got genuine intellectual curiosity on the themes, you know, providing
totally.
It's not the flying spaghetti monster or anything, right? You know, he's
right.
he's taking the material seriously. I'll take that. A well-done movie that wrestles with questions and tackles, like, the hard stuff. Because Noah is not, like, Noah at its core is not a happy time Sunday school story.
No.
It is hard and rough, and it is revealing about the personality of God, you know. And it, to me, like, give me that over some spoon-fed schmaltz.
Right. And I mean, we're talking here, just for fairness sake, I am essentially agnostic, I guess,
sure. yep.
and you are a believing
yep.
follower, and that's
right.
and so we're talking about it from two different angles.
Absolutely.
But we, as far as I can tell, agree 100% on this, that the Bible, and I've studied a lot of Bible stuff and grew up a Lutheran, so I mean I've
sure.
been around it, but the story of Noah. And fairly, there are very few Old Testament stories that are happy.
Correct. Which, again,
is a really dour book.
That is. It is not a fun time. But,
yeah,
again,
things
though,
don't
that's
really
not
get cool until Jesus shows up.
That's true. And you know what? That's the point, right? That's
right.
Like, the Old Testament is setting the table for this thing. So whether you believe or not, that is the point.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean,
that's how the narrative flows. Like, the Old Testament is badass and hardcore.
It's hardcore.
It is hard. Like,
people die. Babies are bashed
yes.
on rocks.
I mean, I've always thought
that. You need to accept this fact about the Bible and not feel like it's always some lovey-dovey
that's
book.
Right. And that does
not hippies writing this thing.
And that does a disservice, like, to the good stuff at the end. Like, that does a disservice
right.
to the New Testament and the Atonement and all that stuff. Like,
right.
you need to get a picture. Like, I strongly believe, as horrid and depraved as human beings can be now and, like, in the past 1,000 years, the stuff that goes down in Babylonia and in Syria and so
yeah.
forth in the
and
day.
Describe it.
It's crazy. It's crazy. You know, and like to
yeah,
the point where
really
like
messy.
It's so messy, and like talk about giving you a window into how God looks at things. Like, no wonder he's like, I'm done talking to you people for 400 years. You know, so, you know, like you are, and I just think that's so compelling, and that's why it seems.
Well,
that's why
yeah,
the Noah thing
like with
seems.
With the Noah story, he's like, it's like God says at one point, "Oh crap, I done effed up."
Yes, I mean,
I don't know what I got to do something. And I'm not starting over completely, so
yes.
we do this. So we've got Noah. So this is our story. But the story itself is what? 700, 800 words?
That's true, right? Right.
But
it packs a punch, though, within that.
It packs a ton of punch.
You get a lot, like I really, you get a lot in there. You get as full a window into the, you know, the personality of God, the creator, Yahweh, you know, whoever. You've got mercy in there. You've got some redemption. You've got, you know, protection of the innocent. You've got wrath, right? Like, he's the God of this. The God of this story is not a cuddly man with white hair, right?
Right.
Like, it's like, this is screwed up. It's time to, like, drop the hammer, right? You get,
right.
I mean, so you're getting that personality, and you're kind of getting that. You're getting this God who changes his mind, who, like, recognizes, like, wow, look what freedom has wrought, right? Look what this free will has wrought. And I just feel like. And then it really kind of sets that table in the long run,
right.
you know, for what's coming down the pike. But I think there's just a lot of power in that that gets glossed over because people just want to talk about sheep and woolly mammoths on the Ark, right?
Right, right, right. Well, you know, as though you know, people watching Doctor Who. I love Doctor Who, so I'm not complaining. But as though people watching Doctor Who are the same people are, you know, questioning the credulity of Noah's Ark story, and then watching Doctor Who. Right? So it's pointless. Like it's an 800. It's, you know, whether it's historically true or not makes no difference at all. It's about the message.
That's true. It's about the themes, right? It's like.
And if there's one thing, as an agnostic, the Bible is an amazing book that has full of amazing messages, and the Noah story is one of them. You don't have to be religious to appreciate
right.
something.
And again, you know, like an interesting foreshadowing, again, it sounds like Arnosti goes down this path too. Noah is a deeply flawed man, right?
Right.
He is
right.
a drunk. I guess there's a scene where Russell Crowe is drunk in a cave. Right, and I heard, and again,
it sounds hilarious.
It sounds great, right? Sounds awesome. And like again, I don't want to bash on people or brethren or whatnot. But it's,
as
you know,
a man who's been drunk in a cave,
that's right. But you know that's like been a point of criticism. But you know what? You want that. You should want that. If you are coming at it from a Christian's perspective, right, from a leader's perspective, that is what you want.
Yeah. You don't
want that to be shown.
Right? Jesus.
What's
you
that?
Want Noah as the you don't want Noah as proto Jesus.
That's right, and he's
you
not.
You want Noah as the like the bare minimum of acceptable human behavior.
That's and like he sucks so much,
but compared to everybody else, he's a damn saint.
But again, the larger point being, and you see this throughout the Bible, like really throughout the Bible, everyone they're all dickheads, right? Mm-hmm. Like Samson. What mm-hmm. a douchebag. David, mm-hmm. right? David, the greatest king ever. There's a whole chapter devoted to just the biggest dick move in the history of history.
Right.
Right? You know, his general is fighting on his behalf and he's banging his wife. Like, who you, right?
Right.
And like, but that's given very specific, you know, that's been given very specific attention. And all the losers that Jesus was pounding the pavement with back in the day, all losers, right? Tax collectors and fishermen and
yeah, and prostitutes. The Bible has its losers. Porno chapter with Song of Solomon.
Absolutely. So it embraces those flaws of humanity, right? And what's the basic message of it all? It's like, no matter how screwed up you are, you know, you can turn things around, you know, right?
Right.
So with,
right.
you know, with... Yeah, again, since it's biblical, with you know, with divine aid, with divine intervention, whatnot, but you can turn the story around. You can be used, and that should be like heartening, unless you've got such a Messiah complex that your crap don't stink, so to speak.
Right?
Shouldn't you be heartened by that message? You know, so
right.
Like, not to be on a soapbox, but I just feel like you should embrace that. Embrace Russell Crowe getting plastered in a tank.
I do, because I would get plastered in with him in that cave.
You would. Like, who wouldn't?
Anytime.
Right. Who wouldn't? I mean, that's kind of the point. So, like.
And, you know, on the total other side of that, it's the stuff I've been reading about this, like, global warming, climate change message that Aronofsky's trying to put into this.
Yeah, so that's my only hesitation. Like,
so,
I
here's.
That's
my
hesitation.
Yeah, my impression of that.
Yeah, you tell me.
Is something like. People will read anything into whatever they want.
I agree.
And so you've got this idea of this great flood. Well, that's, you know, I'm not going to get on the climate change soapbox here, but so the theory rides, and I believe it personally, but I don't want to go there, that as the ice caps melt, our seas rise, and bad junk happens. It's not a good job. It's not a good deal that we're in. So that's the prevailing theory, and that's fine. The fact that there's a movie about a flood does not predicate a global warming
right.
message. And I think that that's basically what's going on here, not having seen it yet, but –
I just don't. Yeah, it seems like it'd be a hard parallel to draw. You know, it's not like
Aronofsky's smarter than that.
Yeah, because that'd be really hacky, You know,
yeah, it'd be hacky, it'd be ham-fisted, it'd be stupid.
And it's not like these guys are like, we're not going to exchange carbon credits. You know, it's not like that.
Right,
you know?
It's not. Yeah, it's not that. I will not change from coal power to electricity.
that's right. Yeah. So, but to me, though, I will
say. And that's why God smites them, right?
I will say, like, environment, like, little e environmentalism, I'll put it that way, of like. Like, it is biblical that man has been entrusted to take care of the earth, right? And so it's look, just the fact that he's saving all these animals has got a little e, not big E, the movement, political movement, little e, environmentalism. Like, to me, that's more than fair. That slots in perfectly with what the story is, with what Adam was told, right? All that stuff. So, like, to me, that's what I'm hoping it will be. And I'm hoping that. Like, I read like a review in Variety mentioned Al Gore. It's like, God, please, no, I just don't let me think. Yeah, don't let me think Al Gore is in this.
That
like,
stuff just – that doesn't wash with me as legitimate. And if I see it and it's legitimate, fine.
Yeah.
Aronofsky fails.
Right.
But Aronofsky's smarter than that, and I don't find that to be credible.
And I've got faith that it's the themes that he's interested in more than like a cheap
message.
Political point, right? So
why would he spend, $220 million to make a cheap political point?
And it's something that he's been grappling with for 15 years. I'm guessing he hasn't been like. Burning the midnight oil, thinking about Wim Powell.
Seething, like twisting his mustache, thinking
That's
about
right.
how he's going to like get it to all the religious types who don't believe in global warming.
Yeah,
I don't think it just doesn't make sense.
I think, go ahead. Yeah, to me, it's like so. The stuff that he's probably taking liberties with me with narrative liberties are the ones that are most exciting to me. Like I guess there's some really fantastical elements, right? There's Nephilim wandering the earth, right? Which is awesome to me.
That's awesome.
Like, angels who sided with humans over God, great, right? Bring it on. That's great. I think that's rich stuff. Like the stone giants, like the offspring of these angels, like the offsprings of Cain, that stuff. Bring it on. That's great.
So here's my question. And I know the answer to this question, so I guess it's rhetorical.
Yeah.
But it still begs asking. People en masse can accept 300 and not ask any stupid, dumb questions about it.
Yeah.
But you put it in a Bible context, and all of a sudden, it's got that weight. Why can't people just... let a story be a story.
So, again, it is rhetorical because we do know that. So the obvious question is, 300. So, obviously that doesn't have the kind of weight in the worldview weight that something biblical would have. Though I see your point. Like, to me, the third, to me, Noah, like, I never held Noah as some kind of a sacred character.
I don't think anybody really
does.
Until you ask them to reckon with a fictionalized account of it.
Like, to me, Noah's not very high on my list of favorite Bible characters. He's fascinating, but like, I mean, I know, it's not like I revere him. I mean, if Aronofsky was doing, and we've talked about Last Temptation of Christ
right
at length here, even though I don't have a problem with it, there's some really moronic parts of that movie, right?
Oh, God. Hey, Jesus, let's go get a cannoli. Harvey Keitel, I'm Judas.
So dumb. So, like, but even then, I wouldn't, like, it's not like he's making a movie where,
In that case, Salman Rushdie was trying to make a stink with his book.
Yeah.
Like it was an honest attempt to make a stink. I don't believe that Aronofsky wants to make a stink. I believe that Aronofsky wants to make a rad movie.
And to me, that's the key. So, like, if you're making a movie just to, like, take a piss out of Christians or something,
I don't want to see that.
Nobody wants to, Jesus, was whatever, and screw you. But if you're, like, making a genuine movie and you are, like, you personally are wrestling with this stuff, which you have to think at some point Aronofsky did, considering his heritage, right?
And his
journey towards current worldview. Like, give me that. I think that is biblical. Like, from my point of view, right, from my end of the spectrum, like, I think that is purely biblical to wrestle and to question and to take these themes and to be creative and to be artistic, Like, I mean, to me, I'll take that over – fireproof, right?
Well, yeah, and I mean,
I'll take or something safe, and because, like, again, especially with the Old Testament, man, because that is down and dirty. You know, there's like there was straight up Lord of the Rings stuff going on back then.
Yeah.
I truly believe that,
and
right?
And that's where all of this, I mean, all of the Lord of the Rings, any Dungeons and Dragons business, any of this fantasy stuff that we pay top dollar to make and see, it's all based in biblical stories, you know? I mean, the Bible has basically every story ever written.
Yes, right. Themes,
in its thing,
motifs, characters, yeah. Narratives,
and,
right.
And you can always just – you can close your eyes and open the Bible to a page and find a chapter, read that chapter, and you can adapt it to something.
Sure.
That you're writing now, and it will make sense. But – so if that's fine with everybody. You can have all the messianic stories of the Matrix and Star Wars and all this business, and nobody blinks an eye. But once the name is not Neo, but Jesus, it suddenly has this weight that it didn't have before, and people scrutinize it on a totally different level.
That's true. You know, and I really think though Jesus-related stuff is a bridge on its own. Like,
it's a lot harder.
It is. I mean, it's its own thing. You know, like, so, I mean, there's just so many, like, to me, that's its own, I mean, cause that's its own thing, right? That is, like, cause he's the man, right? So,
yeah.
Like, but the other tertiary stuff, everything you said, I agree with. Like, so I'm really hoping Noah makes a bank. Like, I really hope it cleans up. And I will say that I've been, like, I read a couple of reviews from the Patheos blog, which is kind of a spiritual, you know, talks about religious issues. I read a review from a guy from the National Catholic Register, all glowing, all loved it, and, like, talked about this stuff. Like, embraced this the stuff, the craziness, the thematic wrestling, you know, all that. And, in fact, they note that, yes, you could – and they talked about the environmentalism stuff. But, again, to your point, it's like it wasn't – you know, it really wasn't that crazy. You know, it's like it fits in with – you know, what God's message was to his creation, like, take care of this place.
Yeah,
right?
You're not taking care of this place as I instructed you to, so screw you.
That's right. Though, for me, the crux will be here's where the Noah film I'll be looking at, interestingly. Does God send the flood because mankind took a dump on a beaver dam, or, you know, they were so depraved that he had to hit the reset button, right?
I hope for two,
because that's the point, right? Like, you can feed in, you know, like, whatever, slashing and burning rainforest or whatever. You can feed that into the whole thing, but it's got to be, like, man and his depravity, you know, utterly, you know, just was so revolting that – and it pained God to do this. And, he, you know, and he said, screw this, but I will – but I will, like, here's this – here's this molecule of hope in the form of Noah and his family, right?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's the power of the story. And it sounds like Aronofsky is going for that. I cannot wait to see this movie.
You know, and not all of Aronofsky's movies are great by any stretch of the imagination. But, like, Pi is a mixed movie. Tree of Life is a mixed movie. But Requiem for a Dream is an amazing movie. And Black Swan is a hell of a movie. And his track record, both from just a strict cinematic perspective and from his sort of universal themes perspective, because they're all universal
themes. And Tree of Life, though, was Malick, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, not Tree of Life. What the heck?
What were you thinking?
Hang on. It's not Tree of Life. Sorry. I should be more prepared for the
Friday. I think I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about.
I'll tell you in 10 seconds.
Is it The Fountain? Seconds.
The Fountain.
Yeah.
That's correct. It's because Rachel Weisz turns into a tree. That's why.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. Not a great movie, but he's a man of large themes.
Like, you know, like probably I think the only Aronofsky movie I've seen in its entirety, I've seen pieces of other ones, The Wrestler, right?
Oh, and The Wrestler too.
Which is a great movie, you know? Talk about just a departure, right? But
right.
A great movie.
But everything he does is about universal, large themes. There's nothing specific about his work. The story of The Wrestler could be the story of
right.
a businessman or a football player or a firefighter. It doesn't matter. The universal theme is what's important. And if there's one thing that there is, that whatever anybody believes about the Bible, it is chock damn full of universal themes. And he's taking one of them and making a thing out of it.
And if
there's
this
anybody
is a risk.
In the world I trust to do that, it's him.
And this is a big risk. I mean, this is easily the biggest movie he's ever made, right?
Oh, easily, yeah.
Easily the biggest movie ever made, and I think there's a lot of money on it, and you know, we'll see.
I think
it will succeed.
Yeah, I think even if it's like say the religious community rebels against it.
Yeah.
It will still be, I believe it'll still be successful because if that happens, people will want to go see why.
So now let's finish it on this note. So we've both kind of showed where we are coming at it, what worldview we personally adopt mm-hmm. and go from. So I will say, I really, you know, I hope that the religious community, all, you know, obviously Noah is a nexus point for all like the major religions, right? So that's another kind of an interesting aspect. So I just hope that it is like people do go looking at it saying, okay, here is a deeply talented man who's obviously thinking about these and wrestling with these, wants to make a great movie, but treats the material the way it should be treated and doesn't shy away from the dirt and grime of it. And we should embrace that. We should champion that kind of art form, and we should hope that we get more movies like this in the future, right?
Right.
Like the real hard stuff, not the sappy stuff. Give us more. So that's
hope. Don't patronize me. I know the Bible. You don't have to explain it to me.
Absolutely. So that's my side of it. Like, I didn't want the disclaimer from Paramount. Like, don't.
That irritated me.
That
too.
Is very. That's condescending and patronizing.
It's condescending, and I do not like being patronized.
And like, if someone is going to go in there wanting to tear a new one, it doesn't make a difference what the title card says, right?
Yeah.
So, like, judge it on its own, and judge it on the fact a human is wrestling with these themes, and he's applying his monumental talents to that task, and we should be grateful for that.
Well, just watch it as a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And just watch it. And it sounds like it's badass and entertaining.
It sounds like it. And hopefully next up you got Eli Roth making the adaptation of Revelation.
So let me ask you this, though. From your side, from like, you know, do you fear that there would be any kind of dismissing Noah out of hand because of like, ooh, creationism, or ooh, art, the Noah's Ark, or ooh, fairy tales? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
not overgeneralize. You know, points of view. But do you think there's a risk on that from folks who don't believe?
There's a certain group there's a group of irritating atheists out there who I'm no more interested in listening to than I am interested in listening to Rush Limbaugh or whoever. Doesn't matter. I have no interest in dogmatists.
Sure.
And there's a certain level of like the Bill Hitchin or Chris Hitchens type of atheist who says, you mentioned the Bible, I tune out.
Right.
And that's fine. They can go away.
Like the Richard Dawkins type.
The Richard Dawkins business. I don't have any time for that.
Yeah.
If that small group, and frankly, it's a small group, most of the people who I know who aren't subject to religiousness, don't see religion as necessarily bad or negative or distasteful or anything. Like, it's just what it is, you know? To me personally, the idea of your religion is about as important as your, take on, I don't know, how property tax law. Like, this doesn't matter. Everybody can have what they want, and I think most people are on the same page as me with that. And so I think most people are going to come at Noah, most non-religious people are going to come at Noah as a movie. And just like with Star Wars and just like with The Matrix and Harry Potter and thousands of other movies of messianic myths, people are going to look at this and they're going to recognize the universal theme, assuming it's a good movie. Just take as an assumption Noah's a good movie.
Yeah.
They're going to recognize the universal theme of it and eat it up because it's awesome.
Right.
And frankly, the Bible is awesome. I don't have to believe the words in it to say, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is everything. Like, everything is in this book. It's like, I mean, it's the, whether you believe it or not, it's the best book ever.
Right.
It has everything in it. I'm a philosophy guy. I read plenty of that junk, and nothing beats the Bible for both universality and succinctness.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, right. So
you it may be the most succinct, gigantic tome ever written.
It's succinct as hell, and it's not nearly as long as a David Foster Wallace book. But people read that stuff and say, "Oh, this is amazing." No, it's not. It's terrible, and there's a reason he killed himself. Sorry.
Yeah.
But the Bible has everything in it, and if you want to take a piece of it and fictionalize it, you have to do two things. You have to make it big, and you have to editorialize, because it's just not long enough to not do that.
And
nothing in the Bible is long enough.
Right. And then I would just say, you just got – and just like – like, I don't say – you don't have to treat it with reverence necessarily, but like go – like at least – you know, like go in with like with decent intentions. So not like not to like just take a dump on it or just screw with Christians or whatever, you know?
No, and but that's –
be,
but
be
that
true to like – that, that's, I guess that's what I – that'd be my thing. So it's like, you know, take it, wrestle with it, deal with it, you know? Give
well, I don't
something new.
See, don't yeah,
give,
yeah, I mean,
give me something like, new. Don't whitewash it, right?
Richard but, Dawkins, Noah, I would never want
that. Right, sure, sure. No, and I wouldn't watch Kirk Cameron's Noah, you know?
No, I don't want to watch Kirk Cameron's Noah either. Right. God, that'd be terrible.
Right, it would be terrible. So like to me, the sweet spot's in the middle. Give me like, you know, and I'll just close with saying like, The Raid 2 is coming out this weekend. I can't seem to find it anywhere, but obviously it's probably going to be the greatest movie ever. I'm so psyched to it. But if I had to choose between the two right now, which one I'd see, I'd go see Noah right now. Because
sure.
That one, I'm just fast, like, just utterly fascinated by what – I have no idea what's coming. It sounds balls out.
Yeah,
and
I have no idea. I've even avoided trailers, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I've read a little bit. I've read enough to like know where the prevailing winds
right.
are sort of going. But I'm trying to avoid everything so that I can actually experience it.
Yeah, and I'm going on a review blackout. I was just very interested to see what like current like you know Christian writers, religious writers are, and it's been universally acclaimed. So,
well, and that's the thing with Darren Aronofsky. Outside of all the biblical stuff, outside of all of the philosophical junk and the environmental crap and
yeah.
whatever, every no matter what the quality of the individual movie is, every single Darren Aronofsky movie. Is and has been for me an experience between the sort of confusion and of Pi to the utter disgust of Requiem for a Dream to the bizarreness and time travel-y business of the Fountain to the
real world depression of the wrestler, right?
As a wrestling fan who has watched literally every single one of his favorite wrestlers die, all my top five wrestlers of growing up are all dead.
Yikes!
And they're all they would be under 50 today, and they're all dead. And seeing that, and that's an experience. And the sort of obsession of ballet and the Black Swan. Every single movie of his is an experience, and a movie being an experience is something you don't get every day. It's not something you're getting from 300 to. It's not something that you're going to get from – it's not even something you get from The Wolf of Wall Street.
Right.
It's not an experience. It's fun to
right.
watch, and it's cool, and it's you know it's full of great cussing and some really awesome lines.
Yeah.
But it's not something that hits me in the gut.
Which is
Aronofsky always hits me right
and so,
in the,
and bringing it full circle, like that's why, you know, like having experienced True Detective recently.
That's why True Detective,
and, right? And
Henry
you're Breaking Bad, right? And,
so
and The Wire, all that stuff. Henry Porter, whatever. Like to me, I see the potential in Noah being that, yet also just being a badass blockbuster, right?
Yeah.
Where
if
freaking Russell Crowe fights, you know, a bunch of marauding Neanderthal douchebags, and there's badass half angels with fire
yeah.
and swords and stone
and,
giants.
And I mean, on the front end, it's Russell Crowe, Jennifer Connelly, and Emma Watson.
Right.
Like, these are stars
sure.
in this thing. So, I mean, it's obviously aiming to be a blockbuster. But he's riding a fine line, man.
It's going to be interesting.
It's going to be great.
So really, really pushing for it. So we've got an hour, which is good. I don't think that's
better than we do with what's more. That's longer we go with four people.
So we'll see. So next week, the rubber will meet the road. We'll have some NOAA reactions. But I've got my Friday marked off, already to go see it. Really
when does
looking
it open?
Forward to it. It's Friday. So
this coming Friday.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so if people are listening to this now, it'll be currently Friday. We record on Wednesday. So so it'll be Friday. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll have our box office reports, and we'll have this and that. And I really hope from the faith community, I really hope they at least give it a shot. Like, even if they didn't like it, that's fine. But just go in and give it a shot. And like,
don't reject it out of hand.
Right, don't reject
it
out of hand.
I would say that on both sides of the aisle.
Like, grapple with the art. Grapple with his vision. You know, like,
yeah, grapple with
the,
like,
criticize the vision. That's fine. Like, just like,
fine.
Give it its due diligence.
Question it, and that's fine. But yeah, take it as, you know, your lesson, like the lessons people learn in church are all about wrestling with your flaws.
Right.
And
absolutely
getting to it and understanding that you are not a saint. You
absolutely.
You are not Jesus.
That's right. There's one of those in the world. And even Noah, who we all like and sing songs about in Sunday school or whatever, he was, you know, by all accounts, a loser. But
yeah.
Yeah, he just he did become this badass. So let's see that, wrestle with that, and like, hopefully that comes through.
And on the other side of it, for all those crappy, they're zealots, just like the others, just like the zealots on the other side, the atheist zealots. Don't dismiss it out of hand because it's a religious thing.
Right.
It's not a religious thing. It's a story from the greatest book ever written. Whoever wrote it, however long it took to write, whatever the history you believe, it is legitimately the greatest book out there. And the themes in it are universal, and there's no reason to dismiss it out of hand because people who believe something that's different than you believe that it's real or right. A metaphor for something or whatever. Don't dismiss it out of hand.
It's not about those people. You know, like it's
– oh.
And like, so it's not even about Darren Aronofsky, right? You're going in this movie, it's not about him or his cocktail party friends or any atheist or whatever. It's about the themes and the vision he's presenting. And like,
judging from my experience with Darren Aronofsky, this is a man with no agenda. He is wrestling with something and working through it. And this is the movie that comes out of that. And that's the same with the wrestler.
And just knowing that and doesn't it just excite you knowing that this has been the movie he's wanted to make for like two decades?
Oh my god!
Like,
man.
What does that tell you? You know,
he's a crazy man, and his movies are crazy.
Yeah.
And
how weird is it that it's a Noah movie? So
it's like,
doesn't that excite you? That's just
yeah. Well, it's like saying that it's like telling me that that David Lynch is going to film a movie about Esther.
Yeah, that's right.
Wait, what?
He wants to do that Nebuchadnezzar movie. He's been wanting.
Right.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's time.
You've got to sit up and take notice of that and take it seriously.
Take it seriously.
You don't undertake like I personally. I want to write and make horror movies. I don't want to make the Noah story.
Right.
I don't want that on my back. Darren Aronofsky wants that on his back. So I say, you know, take it. What it's worth.
And kudos to Paramount for taking this this risk. So, like, again, I hope it succeeds because I want other studios to invest this, like, treat this material, like, don't have this material relegated to straight to DVD stuff starring former sitcom people. You know, God bless them, whatever, but that's not really moving the needle as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
You know?
So.
All right. I think we are done. I think I may have just lost Daryl. Daryl, are you still there? I think I lost you.
Did you lose me?
Oh, you're back.
Oh,
he's back.
I'm back. I must
maybe God has sent a flood to your little part of it.
Shut up, atheist.
All right, so that's it. I think we should wrap it up now.
Noah,
at the very least, badass angels with flaming swords. You can't beat that. So,
so
give it a whirl. Thank you for tuning in. We had an hour plus, but it was a lively discussion. We appreciate it. This is actually I think this encapsulates the conversation we had off the air a month or so back. So.
Yeah.
So I think it was good. So anyway, so that Van Damme movies are great, and watch this spy movie and Wolf of Wall Street too. What's the spy movie called?
Five Fingers, five being the number.
All right, so you've got a good watch list. You have two Van Damme movies, You've got Wolf of Wall Street, Five Fingers, and then Noah as a capper. And then The Raid 2, if you can track it down, obviously. But I think it's only playing in New York City. So
yes, and to cap us all out, we need a Hellraiser reference.
Yes, go ahead.
So, Jesus wept.